You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Hi there, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the horse racing world. It is Thursday, October the 29th, and it is cold, wet and rainy here in TW11, but plenty of bright spots around the horse racing world, particularly in Australia and America, as we gear up for the Melbourne Cup and Breeders' Cup respectively, much more of which later in this edition. The Racehorse Owners Association, who in part support this podcast, have released their ownership COVID action plan, a six-point plan to attempt to retain owners, to keep their enthusiasm and to reassure them in terms of what the organisation is doing to try to bolster prize money in this country. And it couldn't come at a more opportune time, because yesterday at Tattersall's sales, yet more top-quality bloodstock being sold to go abroad, this case to Australia, where the opportunities financially are significantly greater. In a moment, I'll be talking to Paul Moroney, the man who was responsible for signing the ticket for English King at 925,000 guineas. But first of all, I'm joined by broadcaster and journalist Jane Mangan. Jane, how worried should England and Ireland be that a growing number of really smart horses are eschewing potential future opportunities on these shores to continue their careers in Australia and elsewhere?
Be worried? I'm not so sure. I think we're examining this particular case because it happened through public auction. But as you say, this happens quite regularly behind closed settings, and we see them turn up in Oz. But to be fair, I will leave this to the listeners to decide if they think English King was going to be competitive at the very highest level in Europe, because I know Sir Dragon A probably was just a notch below, and look how competitive he is and his first run down in the Cox Plate. So if we are to be worried about anything, for me, it's breeding these middle distance horses. And I think Camelot will probably be the last surviving vein of Mangeur blood. I've seen, even in my few years in this business, alleged go dead, Phil go dead, those middle distance lines go extinct. And I appreciate people just tell me that happens all the time, but it doesn't have to happen. And when you see high class Sons of Camelot go down, a lot of them are gelded and a lot of them don't have stud value up here. And why is that? Because these middle distance horses always hold their value. When you see horses of his caliber go to the horse and training sale and make nearly a million guineas, it says a lot.
When you see a horse like Keats, however, from Aidan O'Brien's, making 200,000, which is a lot of money, but not fortunes in the context of what Ballydoyle horses are sometimes sold for, does that make you think about there being very limited incentive for even Ballydoyle to keep a horse of a fairly significant ability?
That's another valid question. They're all regally bred horses. The reality is we're in a very fortunate position, Coolmore in a very fortunate position to have those horses coming through in the generations. So the options for them in Europe, what do you do? I'd imagine if you step Keats into Group 1 company over here, it mightn't be fantastic results. So the fact that Australia and Southern Hemisphere countries are coming in and giving us huge money, I would look at as a big positive, to be honest.
So why are these horses so attractive to the Southern Hemisphere and particularly to Australia? Well, the ticket was signed yesterday by agent Armando Duarte, but the horses are bound for the stable of Mike Moroney, whose brother Paul is an integral part of the operation and is the bloodstock agent responsible for masterminding this sale. Paul has been talking to me this morning, and I've been asking him to reflect on the purchase of English King.
Well, Nick, you certainly don't find them every year, horses of that quality. And, yeah, I was a little bit surprised to see him in the catalogue. And saying that, he had been touted as being on the market during the year a couple of times. We got wind of it, and we knew there were a few Australians trying to land him earlier in the year. They didn't quite come up with the money that was required. So, we were aware that he was possibly available, but a little bit surprised to see him in the catalogue. And once we saw him in the catalogue, we were pretty much hell-bent on trying to get him and put a syndicate together. And fortunately, it came together. It sort of came to fruition in the last 48 hours. And you know, we got great response from our client base, two particular clients in New Zealand. Gerard Peterson, who's been racing horses with me for years, race second coming, won the Victoria Derby, Brew that won the Melbourne Cup. He's the main controlling shareholder in Sound and another good horse we've got at the moment called Chapada. And he's brought into racing recently a well-known New Zealand businessman, Rod Duke, who's quite a Leviathan businessman in New Zealand. And it's great to have these people on board and prepared to back our judgment and to have a real crack at buying a high-quality horse like that to bring down to Australia.
Did you know you were going to have to give that sort of money? Is that what was in your head?
Yes, it was. It's a small world in the racing industry, and you do get to hear with, you know, a lot of owners are dual ownership with a lot of different stables. So you do get to hear deals that have been done on certain horses. And you know, we were aware of the price that would have been paid for Sir Dragonette before he came down and won the Cox Plate. And we based our figures around that sort of figure, knowing what he had cost to land in Australia, and knew we needed a budget around that because they are peas in the pod. They both went out favourite in the Derby of the year. They both were impressive winning the lead up to the Derby, and then they possibly their next two runs didn't put the form on the board that they were expected to after their Derby run. So it was very similar, and we were aware that we'd need that sort of money to buy them. So we got ourselves organised and came up with the goods and had a little bit spare in the pocket to land them back in Australia at the money we'd suggested to our clients would need.
Well, I'm glad you've got a little change. That's for sure. I think for our listeners, it's worth putting a bit of context on this. It seems like a lot, but he could win a big prize or two, and you've pretty much got your money back.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the people that are going into these horses, it's not their last penny they've got. And they love racing, and they band together, join their resources. And part of, and yes, it is a lot of money to pay for a horse, but he's a proven horse. We know he's got quality, and we see what these real quality European horses can do when they come to Australia. There's so much money and prize money across the board, but definitely at the top end. And these horses should be able to compete at the top end, barring accident or injury. And there's a great chance of not only getting the money back, but making money out of these horses. They've also got stallion pedigrees for an afterlife. And there's a, you know, there's another way of getting a return on your money if everything falls into place.
I don't want to dampen your bonfire because it's a great day for you guys. How worried do you think we should be that horses like this are slipping through our hands out of necessity?
Look, you're fortunately breeding the best horses in the world, especially at middle distance plus. And yeah, you know, that's always going to continue. You know, the signs up there at the moment, from what I'm reading, is that possibly the Arab contingency, who have been really supportive of racing up there and pretty much holding it together, perhaps some of their interest is waning. COVID's probably brought that around, and there are a few warning signs there that things could be changing in the near future or not too distant future. Yes, these horses are getting taken out of the European racing scene and finding their way down to Australia to bolster the racing stocks and the quality of horse racing in Australia. And yes, it is of concern, I would guess. I see people like Mark Johnston, you know, coming out and saying it is a concern, and there's no better voice and understanding of horse racing in England than Mark Johnston. Yeah, it's got to be a concern, but it's a free market, and that's the way of the world. And I don't think it's going to change overnight with the amount of money that's available in Australia, and with the Australian economy holding up quite well compared to other economies, you know, affected by COVID. So, yep, it's something that should be concerning, but I can't see it changing.
And just in terms of your own string at the moment, before it's joined by Emissary and Keats, of course, and this horse, English King, you've got an exciting few days ahead, or Mike's got an exciting few days ahead.
Yeah, and all the horses that are exciting in the next few days are ones I've sourced and selected either as yearlings or tried horses. Buffalo River, a Noble Mission horse that I bought 2 years ago at the hit sale, he runs for $1.5 million in the Group 1 Cantata Stakes at Flemington on Saturday. He ran second in a Group 1 at his last start, and we're hoping he can improve one placing. That would be great. We've got two runners in the Derby this weekend as well. Funnily enough, both maidens, one called Tour of Duty and one called Waisaka, but they were both bought to be Derby horses. And in what looks an even bunch of three-year-olds for the Spring Derby in Victoria, they're both runners' chances. They'll stay the trip, and you know, with a little bit of luck, we might be able to cause another boil over like Second Coming did in 1997. Also, we've got Sound trying to get in the back door to the Melbourne Cup, the German import, by winning the Hotham Handicap. And last time we tried that, we were successful with Brew, and that was 20 years ago, coming out a long time ago, and he went on to win the Melbourne Cup. So maybe Lightning can strike in the same place with Sound on Saturday as well. And we've got a filly running in the Group 2 Wakeful as well, who has already been stakes placed, and she's heading towards the Oaks on Thursday. So, you know, another good run there would bolster her chances in the Oaks as well. So very exciting times. Hopefully Sound can make it. Otherwise, we'll be without a cup runner this year. We've got another horse we're paying up with called Chapada, which I co-own, which races in the same colours as Sound, which is Gerard Peterson's colours, who is now 25% owner of English King. But it looks highly unlikely that Chapada will make the field, and he'll, but because of paying up for Melbourne Cup, he can run the following Saturday for $200,000 extra in a $400,000 race for being in a sector in the Melbourne Cup that never made it into the field. So these are the types of bonuses that are available in Australia and makes racing so great here.
And there it is in a nutshell. Paul Moroney, thanks so much for talking to me.
Cheers. Thanks, Nick.
Paul Moroney there, and my thanks to him for what was a fascinating insight into why these horses are so attractive to Australian buyers and what a vibrant scene it is in spite of the difficulties presented globally by COVID-19 still in Australia. Jane Mangan is with me. We're going to look ahead to all the best of the action over the weekend and look ahead also to the Breeders' Cup. But first of all, Jane, let's go jumping and down Royal and Stars on Show at the track in the north of Ireland, particularly tomorrow in the shape of Envoi Allen, one of the most exciting jump horses we've seen for many, many years.
Look, you start off with Envoi Allen in the beginner's chase tomorrow, arguably the most exciting horse in training. Everything we've seen from him is flawless. Jack Kennedy is on board for the first time in public, and because he's a point-to-point winner from Colin Bowles' yard, anything bar an impressive win will be disappointing. Abracadabra's in the WKD. He's horse going down the champion hurdle route. I do make a point for myself, and I think National Hunt people in general should do this. Don't talk with Cheltenham before Christmas. There's a lot of good races between now and Christmas, rather than targeting everything around March. So Abracadabra starts off. He's got to take on Aspire Tower and Jason Middleton and Six Shooter. But he was very good last year as a novice, and I think he's a horse with a lot of pace. We see Queen's Brook and the Mares and Fakir Dalin all trained by Gordon Elliott on Friday, and all seriously, seriously talented horses.
And why do you think it is that Down Royal has done so well to attract all these horses? What is it about the track that makes the top trainers want to run there?
Number one, very good track. Always very safe, very fair, good long run in. To be honest, it's probably well marketed, but the racing is there. I think the presence of Cato Starr, Don Cossack, Paul Nicholls supporting it as well. We crave cross-channel competition in jumping, and it rarely happens before the spring. So that was a big help as well. But probably a good marketing team and a combination of a good... Talk about Saturday's champion chase. The race, obviously, Cato Starr won twice. Jiggins Town has won the last seven renewals of it. And they, of course, have Delta Work in this year.
And how high order do you think Delta Work could take this year? He was just bubbling away last year. Terrific win in Ireland at the Dublin Racing Festival. For me, he was a little disappointing in the Gold Cup.
He was. You could say he could be even better this year. I think he's only 7 rising 8. He's official rating of 170. I think this horse is the real deal. Now, he got beaten in this race last year off a falsely run pace. He's a horse that can be a little bit keen and prefers to be running off the pace, off a strong gallop. Obviously, we have the added intrigue of Dennis O'Regan riding, presenting Percy on his stable debut for Gordon Elliott. You throw in the likes of 2A Per Me for Noel Mead, who's obviously won the last two renewals of this with Road to Respect. This is a good renewal of the race, albeit it could be dominated by the maroon and white.
And just turning our attentions from jumping to the Breeders' Cup, the pre-entries were announced yesterday. Any major surprises there, Jane? Anything that made you raise an eyebrow?
Not particularly. Pleasantly surprised with the level of European competition. Good cross-channel presence from Britain and Ireland and France. Just on first spec, Tarnawa in the turf is interesting that she's first preference for that over the fillies and mares. Of course, she's going to be in against Magical, Lord North, Mogul. We obviously have the juveniles and Battleground is very interesting in that. I've heard the Learjet and Rafe Beckett's team being discussed on your programme, and interesting that Jessica Harrington is going over with Cadillac and Cayenne Pepper as well. I think the Breeders' Cup is special because we have international competition, and this year it was at risk of losing that niche, but fortunately the entries suggest that won't be the case.
And Tarnawa has a double entry in the turf and the filly and mare turf. Which way would you jump if you were Dermot Weld?
Well, honestly, I haven't been to Keeneland and I can't tell you about the distances and the turns and the track itself. But I thought it would be logical for her to avoid Magical and go in the fillies and mares, because, of course, Magical doesn't even have an entry for the fillies and mares turf. But it seems that Mr. Weld, who knows an awful lot more than me, has decided to go straight to take on the colts and geldings in the turf. And just out of interest, I think Cayenne Pepper and Peaceful are strong representatives from Europe, and actually Terrabellum as well in the fillies and mares. So we've got good representation there. And in the juveniles, Nick, any particular fancies for you?
Well, I think that new mandate in the juvenile colts has got an excellent chance for Rafe Beckett. And again, Cadillac, I thought Jessica Harrington might have a good couple of days at the Breeders' Cup. I think he's a very solid horse to improve on a better surface. There's an intriguing clutch of horses lined up for the Europeans in the Breeders' Cup Mile, the FanDuel Breeders' Cup Mile. One of those is the 7-year-old Safe Voyage, who, for all he hasn't won at Group or Grade 1 level, has some very good form at this sort of level. He is trained by John Quinn. I've been talking to his son and assistant Sean, who was busy riding out while he was trying to talk to me at the same time.
Yeah, I'm back in now, Nick. I'm still on horseback, but I'm back in the indoor school, so hopefully there's not much can go wrong here.
Well, I think this is a podcast first that somebody's been talking to me off the back of a horse, so as they say, don't try it at home. How's Safe Voyage doing en route to Keeneland?
He's very well, Nick. We're very happy with him. I went onto the gallops with that first lot this morning to see him do his final little canter before he heads for the plane tomorrow. He worked yesterday morning. I was away at Tattersall's at the horse in training sale, but Dad was watching the work at home, and he was very happy with him. So we're in a good place, we feel.
What first gave you the idea that the Breeders' Cup Mile might be a good target for him?
Funny enough, we came up with the idea quite early in the year, simply because of the venue this year, with it being in Keeneland. Obviously, if it were on the West Coast, as has been the case the last few years, the ground would likely be very fast. But Keeneland, it's not always the case. So we identified it quite a long way out. And as you mentioned earlier on, he's such a good horse going left-handed round a bend. He seems to wheel round bends in the UK. So that gave us a little bit of hope that he might enjoy conditions out in America.
And through his career, he's really been half a 7-furlong horse, half a miler, which seems ideal for the Breeders' Cup Mile. What do you think his optimum is now?
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. I mean, he ran so well in the Prix de la Forêt, beaten by two very, very good horses. But that trip is actually just shy of 7 furlongs by about 15 yards, I think. And you see, he just got a little bit tapped for toe, and at the line, he was galloping very, very strongly again. I think probably a real test over 7 furlongs is needed, or otherwise a mile is probably ideal now.
And is he the sort of horse that you could ride for luck if the draw didn't go his way? I mean, of all the races in the Breeders' Cup, that 14 run a mile, if you get trapped out wide, that can pose difficulties.
Yeah, and I suppose this year especially, because the bend comes up very, very quickly at Keeneland. But he's a very, very versatile horse. You saw when he won the City of York Stakes, we made the running with him. When he broke the track record at Epsom in that, that listed race on Derby Day, they went to frenetic gallop early doors, and Jason just sat in off it. So I'm not too concerned, but clearly you would rather not be drawn too wide.
Just tell us what it means for a yard of your size. Just for those who aren't aware, our international listeners, you've got what, 60, 70 horses?
Yeah, that's right. Predominantly flat horses. We have a small string of jumpers, so ordinarily, this time of year, Nick, I'd be gearing up to go juvenile hurdling at Wetherby or Musselburgh, but it's a little different this year. The passport will be getting stamped next week, and we're looking forward to it, especially, you know, we trained the horse for Ross Harmon, who has been a long-standing punter of ours. He's been a great man to deal with, and he's fully deserving of a horse like this.
He's an amazing horse. He's got such toughness and constitution. I'd imagine that, again, is a one of the key reasons why you're taking him.
Yeah, exactly. He seems to thrive off travel. Obviously, this year he's been to Ireland, he's been to France. He's a very straightforward horse. So that was another tick in the box, should we say. And I'm sure he'll travel to America and take it all in his stride.
And when you look at the field that came out yesterday, the pre-entries, which horses are you most interested in of your rivals?
I think that the European contingent looks very strong, doesn't it, when you consider that two classic winners are going over in the shape of Cameco and Siskin. You've got to rate their chances very highly. Circus Maximus is such a hardy horse as well. One Master, obviously she's an old rival of ours. And then the American horses look every bit as good as last year. Last year's winner looks like she'll turn up again. And there are some other horses that have popped their heads up on that side of the water in the last two or three months. So I think it looks at a very competitive race.
Sean, thanks so much for talking to me. Best of luck.
Many thanks, Nick.
Jane Mangan is still with me and is going to send us home with a winner, as she normally does.
Please, God, we'll go to Clonmel. It is howling a gale force and it is very wet, so I expect the ground to get softer as the day progresses. But I like Western Victory for Declan Queeley and Sean O'Keefe in the Mayor's Chase at 3:50. She's going to have to beat a strong field, including Willie Mullins and Delisa. But Western Victory is a tried and trusted mudlark. She loves fences and she'll go from the front and give it everything.
Jane, thank you very much. My thanks to Sean Quinn and to Paul Moroney earlier on today. Thank you very much for listening as well. Don't forget, if you do enjoy this podcast, please do tell your friends. Rate us, review us and subscribe on SoundCloud, Spotify, iTunes and Google. We will see you again same time tomorrow. That was Thursday, October the 29th. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.